Log Talk Radio. Are you ready?
All right, ladies and gentlemen, it is Attitude Era live time. And you are listening to our special edition makeup interview time with the very lovely Debbie. And we are going to be talking to Debbie Dutch here in just a little bit. As everybody knows, Debbie is very busy. We had a little snafu with, time zone issues, and that's my fault because I still don't know what the heck a time zone is. And also the fact that Blog Talk Radio messed with us that entire night, and we couldn't really do a show anyway.
How many years has it been now where you haven't figured out that you're central time, you're an hour behind me? So he'll tell me to make the show. He'll be like, yeah, set it for 8 o'clock. Set it for 8, and then he'll be texting me at, 6:50. Hey, we're going on in 10 minutes. I'm like, well, 10 minutes. Okay. So now any time he tells me, I always set it for an hour earlier because he doesn't know. He doesn't know what the hell is going on.
Well, think about this. This interview right now will consist of three different time zones. I'm in Central, and I do believe that Debbie is in Eastern, and you are in Pacific.
I'm in Pacific. I'm in Pacific.
Okay, and Big Spring's in Eastern. I'm in Central.
323 is Los Angeles, I believe, or somewhere in California.
Pacific. I'm in Los Angeles.
Yeah, there you go. See, Icon, just forget the word time zone. You're not, he doesn't, it's like me trying to do calculus. Like, he's not, I'm just never going to understand.
That's right, exactly. So let's introduce our guest, and then she's got a little liner, and then we'll have fun with the interview. So, ladies and gentlemen, stepping out of the green room and walking down the aisle, she is the lovely, she is the beautiful, she is the vivacious, actress for time, she is Debbie. Let's go, Dutch.
I love it. Icon. Okay, so, hey, this is Debbie Dutch, and you're listening to the Era Monday Live. Mondays on 89.1 KENS FM. Your hosts are the Icon, with a big swing, also featuring Scott, the director, Hand, and the Modern Nightmare, Matthias.
All right.
Matthias.
There you go.
I got it.
Yeah. And we can edit that together, so it's perfect. So how are you, Debbie? Good to have you with us tonight. Here's how we're going to do this. We have a good hour and a half with you, and we might things go.
Uh-oh.
And if we ask you something that goes a little off the wall and you hang up on us, we'll understand, because I'm used to that. I'm used to women hanging up on me because I try to get a date for prom, you know. So, Debbie, if you want to give us a little background about yourself, and then we'll have some fun with the interview. Go ahead.
Well, How do you want me to begin, Icon?
Well, whatever you want to tell us about yourself, and then we'll just kind of, then we can start asking questions off of that.
Okay. I'd like to start sort of at the beginning, you know, like when I was a little girl.
Sure, that's fine.
Yeah. I grew up in South Central Jersey, in the woods, beautiful home with a bridge and a stream. You had to get to it. You had to cross it. It was called the Red Bridge Farm, but it wasn't really a farm. But it was it was so beautiful. So what I'm getting to is that I was a country girl. A lot of people think I'm Hollywood, I'm this, I'm that. Basically, I just love the woods and the country and nature and going in the woods and, you know, exploring. But all the while, I knew I was going to be an actress. I used to pretend that I was a movie star ever since I was a little girl. And I raised puppies, so I put the puppies there as my audience. In the woods, it was so funny. And I had I know this sounds a little corny, but actually, you know, I had like God being my director. And that was like from the age of, I would say, you know, when you start being a little girl, like 4 or 5. And my mother got me, started me on ballet classes. So that's when I found out that I had a potential for dancing. And I just did ballet forever. And then I was going to actually become a professional ballet dancer at the age of 15. But then what happened, go to New York. But what happened was I was also a cheerleader. You know, I loved sports and I was a cheerleader. I broke a little bone in my knee, and so I had to go on a cast for several months, and it took me, a period of time to get the knee back together again, and after that, I couldn't do the 4 hours of toe a day, so that was a change in my destiny. I went from being a ballet dancer. But I still dance. I've been in movies dancing, et cetera, and so forth. Death Dancers is a big one. Have you ever seen Death Dancers?
I have, yes.
Oh, then you see me dancing all over the place, a death dance. Before I have sex and seduce and kill my victim. So I use my ballet training throughout my life, but I still dance. I love to dance every time. As a matter of fact, I just might be dancing in an upcoming film. I don't want to say too much about it because it's just sort of happening. But anyway, so that's an interesting story. And so I was in musical comedies and plays in high school. And then when I started my professional career, my grandmother said to me, and my grandmother was like my idol. My mother was kind of like my best friend, but my grandmother, you know, was very successful. And she said, Debbie, you're going into the world now. What are you going to do? And she actually had, my grandmother was good friends with Agnes Moorehead. Do you know who Agnes Moorehead is?
I have heard her name, yes.
Did you hear the series Bewitched with Elizabeth
yes.
Montgomery? Okay, she played
yes.
Andorra, the Samantha's mother, the witch.
Yes.
Agnes
yes.
Moorehead. Anyway, she was good friends with my grandmother. So before I graduated high school, I was in a couple of I was always in the high school plays at my high school, and my grandmother invited Agnes Moorehead to come watch me in the play. I was playing Millie in Picnic. That was a young ingenue part, and my grandmother wanted to find out if I had the talent to go professional actress. So she invited Agnes Moorehead to come to my high school, and you wouldn't have believed at that time, you know, back in the 70s, I guess it was, the late 70s, something like that. I mean, Bewitched was like the thing. So when Agnes Moorehead went to the senior play at my high school, that everybody went nuts, you know, but they didn't act like idiots, you know. It was cool, calm, and collected. But anyway, Agnes Moorehead told my grandmother that I had talent and to go, you know, to go forward. So I went to New York and auditioned. I'm really doing a thumbnail sketch of the start of my career, but I went to New York, auditioned to be in the Circle in the Square Theater Junior Company. It was called the Junior Company. In other words, it was like an acting school, but out of the acting school, they chose, I guess it was about 20, and everybody auditioned from all over the United States to get into this because you performed on Broadway. So I went to New York and auditioned, and I got accepted. And so I moved to New York for a couple years. And, oh, my first day in New York on Broadway, 50th and Broadway, where Circle in the Square is, I almost got hustled. Can you believe that, Icon?
I can. I mean, because you're beautiful, so yeah.
I was super young. What was I, 16 or something like that? That's when I did Bruce Lee Fights Back from the Grave because I was flying back and forth from L.A. because my grandmother, her first cousin.
You said that was in New York?
Yeah, wait a minute. My grandmother.
Yeah, that's nothing
first,
new in New York. That happens all the time.
Oh, when you hear this story, you're not going to believe it. You're not going to believe it, but don't pick up where I left off about Bruce Lee Fights Back from the Grave, which was my first Hollywood picture that I made. I was on the corner of 50th and Broadway. I had tight white jeans on, thin tight, and then I had this little green velvet halter top on me. So you saw some cleavage. You definitely saw, you know, my tummy. It was summer, you know, it was like, you know, hot in the city. And up came this woman, and she asked if I needed a ride. And I said, oh, that's so sweet of you. No, I'm just going to catch a bus back to my apartment. Everything, you know, it's perfectly all right. But thank you very much. My first day in the city. So I'm thinking, oh, my gosh, all those stories about New York, that's a pile of crap. This woman's so sweet for her to come up and ask if I needed a ride somewhere. And then I go and I'm waiting for the bus, and then she comes back and she says, are you sure you don't need a ride? And I said, no, I don't need a ride. She says, well, this guy's going to take you where you want to go. And this big guy came, and I don't know if that's politically correct to say, but he was a big Afro-American guy, muscles and everything. They started hustling me into this big town car across the street of 49th. See, I'm at 50th and Broadway, and they were shouldering me in, and I'm a little thing, you know. And I put one and one together. Within 2 seconds, I dropped down, ran across the street, jumped in a cab, and said, go. And I said to the cab driver, I said, were they trying to hustle me? And he goes, honey, how old are you? And I said, I guess 16, 17. And he goes, you got a lot to learn. So that was my first day in New York. Isn't that hilarious? But I learned my lesson. I learned my lesson that you got to be careful. That it was called white slavery at the time. And it was.
I'm just glad you didn't say that. That's when I met Donald Trump for the first time.
Actually, I've never met Donald Trump.
it's probably a good thing too, but you know, just think, I guess he's paying $130K these days once you meet him.
Yeah. Well, all I know is that that was the start of my acting career in New York. And after that, you know, I got very adept to living in New York. I was on Broadway, did several productions. But so that was the start. And I've just fell in love with everything about show business, everything, at a very young age. And I wanted to finish, like, with my grandmother and the Agnes Moorhead thing, when Grammy, you know, when it's time for me to step into the world and start making a living, you know, I had a couple ideas of what I wanted to do. I wanted to maybe be a stewardess and travel around the world. What else did I want to? No, that's pretty much the only other choice that I'm thinking of.
And you were also thinking at that time, and I really want to be on the Icons radio show too. I know you were thinking that.
Oh, there's no question about it. This is a dream come true. I love it. But anyway, what happened was that Grammy, my grandmother, said to me, "Well, Agnes Moorhead says you have talent, and if you want to be a success in life, always do something that you love to do, and you'll be a success. If you try to do something you don't, you know, you're not into that much, it's just going to be sort of half-hearted. You know what I mean? And I've always loved acting since I was a little girl. But you got that story. Can you see me in the woods with my puppies, acting, making movies?
I can see that.
Yeah, pretending to be a movie star and then going to New York. And then once I got to Hollywood, that's another whole bunch of stories. But we haven't gotten there yet, so I'm waiting for your next question.
we'll get there, but I want to kind of circle back, and I want to talk to you about a couple movies. We're actually going to talk about the first movie I ever saw you in, where I fell in love with you. From that point forward, my romance with you actually started in '84, but we'll come back to that. Now, you talked about the Bruce Lee movie. Did you actually get to meet Bruce Lee?
No, this was after he passed away.
Okay.
What happened was, my grandmother again. She had a first cousin out here in Los Angeles, in Hollywood. His name was Carol Ryder, CarrollRidher, and he was the astrologer to the stars. So he did, like, Ronald Reagan's astrology, Marlena Dietrich, Robert Wagner, you name it, Ed. Phyllis Diller at the time. This is back in the, you know, the 70s and the 80s, and they were, like, best friends. So Grammy took me to Hollywood, you know, around the same time frame. I was 16, 17, something like that. So I went out to Hollywood, and at one of these big Hollywood parties at Uncle Carol's, he was, you know, he became my, like, uncle. I mean, I called him my uncle, even though he was, I don't know, you know, some sort of distant cousin or something, but he was an older gentleman, and he just took me under his wing. He had a big mansion up in the Hollywood Hills, and all the movie stars went, every single one, to his parties. You can Google Carol Ryder. He was the astrologer to the stars. Anyway, when I went there, he did my chart and said that, you know, I should come out to Los Angeles. Well, I was still too young. And Grammy said, well, you know, we'll think about it. But I met a bunch of people, and that's how I got into the Bruce Lee film. I met a producer. He had a karate studio or kung fu studio next to Chuck Norris at the time, and on Wilshire Boulevard. And he saw me, and he asked if I could audition for his film. And it was a Korean film company. And so I went, and I, because I was in town for a while, I went to the dinner. He had a big dinner at a big Korean restaurant. This is my audition. And the whole table was filled. Nobody spoke any English. They just spoke Korean. And his name was Jun Chong, and he was one of the contenders to be the next Bruce Lee. There were several different, back then, there were several different, I guess the best way of putting it is contender to take over Bruce Lee's position in the martial arts, the kung fu movies. And Jun Chong was the main one because he was with Chuck Norris, who was Chuck Norris at that time, you know, pretty much ruled that whole scene. And I go to the Korean restaurant for the dinner, and I barely could speak any, I couldn't speak any Korean at all. But I just sat there. Jun Chong, who was the Bruce Lee character, he spoke English. And he said that he said the director wants you to look over there. And I'm sitting at the table. I said, okay. So I look over there, which is like to the right or something, at something, and you know. And then he says, okay, now the director wants you to look over there, up towards the ceiling. I said, okay. So he says, don't turn your head. Just do it with your eyes. Then I looked to the ceiling. Then he said, okay, now look that way, to the left. So I looked right, left, up to the ceiling. And then I went back, and that was it. I went home, and I had a manager at the time. He calls me, and they say, they want you to show up in the set tomorrow. My audition, if you see the movie, it's all about my eyes. And I have these big green eyes, blue-green eyes. And if you really look at that movie, you're going to see so many shots of my eyes. And that was my audition. Isn't that interesting? And I learned martial arts on the set, kung fu. I do several scenes. I have to fight the bad guy, and you'll see me doing kung fu. I don't know whether it's judo or whatever the heck it is, but it's a real deal. There was somebody right on the set that showed me what to do, and it was quite an amazing experience. And after I was done, they asked me to sign a 5-picture deal, and I'm still in New York, you know, doing my plays on Broadway, and still kind of, you know, living with my family, you know. I was just coming back and forth because of Uncle Carol. I'm trying to keep the story as through line as possible so you don't get confused. I got out here to meet those stars through my Uncle Carol, who had the Hollywood Hills, you know, the astrologer. And then I had to go back home. I was still a young girl. I did the kung fu film. They wanted me to do 5 kung fu films. And I said no. And one of the reasons why I said no, it was a non-union picture, and I worked like a dog. I was the lead, I was a star, and between the martial arts and the hours, even though, you know, they gave me sufficient time to sleep and all that, but still, I don't know if anybody realizes, I did a lot of my own stunts in that movie. I was exhausted. It was one of the toughest films, and all the films that I've done, this one and Death Dancers, were two of the most difficult films to do as far as physical stamina, you know, because the hours and what was required of me on the set. So I turned it down, but then I was in New York, finishing up my Broadway stint, and I got a phone call from a friend. He said, did you see your billboard on Times Square? And I said, no. There's a big billboard of me on Times Square. This has got to be, like, I don't know, maybe a year after I made the Bruce Lee movie. It was me in the Bruce Lee movie on the Times Square. It was showing at a movie theater on Times Square. And I became a star in, I became a star in Korea.
So when you were on the billboard in Times Square, you became the most second popular thing in Times Square next to Dick Clark's New Year's Rockin' Eve.
You got that one right. That's hilarious. It was fun.
Debbie Dutch is our guest here. We got about we got a good amount of time. We got about 35 minutes here left with Debbie. One thing I do want to channel on here, Debbie, is I want to kind of go through some of the movies, other movies that you've been in, and I'll kind of take you through my fandom, and then you can kind of fill in the blanks. But I remember the very first film I ever saw you on, and I fell in love with you from that movie on. And this kind of leads into something that I'll be filling the blanks. But I saw you in Protocol with Goldie Hawn, and you were the Supergirl in that movie. And, I mean, I love Goldie Hawn to death. But after I saw you as a Supergirl in that movie, I changed my love to you because, you know, Goldie Hawn was taken by Kurt Russell. And I'm like, okay, I'll channel towards her. And then the next time I saw you in a movie, I was snuck up and watched cable at my parents' place at the time, and I watched USA Up All Night, and I saw you in Vice Academy 4, and I'm like going, that's the surfer girl from Protocol. And
I can't believe you put the two and two together.
I'm very good with that.
Oh my God!
If I see an actor and actress, I can tell you what other movies they've been in. That's what me and my dad used to do all the time. We used to watch a movie, right? And then my dad would say, "What other movie was she in?" or "What other movie was he in?" And then we'd like kind of like start listing other movies that we saw them as cameos in movies in. You know?
Well, you're not going to believe the Protocol experience. I'm just going to tell you real briefly. I had 2 weeks on the movie. They picked, I think, 4 safari girls. And I was in the little leopard outfit. But let me tell you something. A lot of the scenes were cut out because if you see the movie, they go from one country to the next. I mean, that movie was a major, major studio picture. And they had to, for an hour and a, I think it was an hour and a half movie, like 90-some minutes. So they had so much footage. But it was so fabulous. I made so much money on that movie. I mean, my audition was almost nothing. I showed up at Warner Brothers, and the timing, it was like timing. There's a little bit of a story behind it.
Let me ask you this. Did you show up to your audition in that bikini?
No. I was dressed like a chic young actress. Yeah, this is the A. This is the A movies. I was just going in for the interview, and when you show up at the interview, I didn't know what the role was or anything. I knew it was for a safari girl, you know, one of the waitresses in the, where all the action takes place. It was so much fun. I was on the set with Buck Flowers. I don't even. Buck Henry, and then Chris Sarandon. I mean, every star in the book were in my scene. Do you remember that scene in the Safari Club? It was absolutely amazing. And so all day long we were in the Safari Club. And I'll tell you something. I'm not bragging or anything. But Herbert Ross was the director, and we're talking about multi-million dollar movie here. We're not talking about, you know, my wonderful Roger Corman movies, which I love and adore, that I have such infinite gratitude for being introduced to Jim Minorski and being used in, oh, goodness, at least five or six Roger Corman movies I was in. And But we're talking a movie. I had my own trailer. I made so much money. It was ridiculous. I bought myself a brand new Mustang after the shoot. But yet, when you watch the movie, it's just, you know, it's little snippets here and there. But when we filmed it, there was quite a bit going on, you know, with dialogue and whatnot. But the end product, especially in the A movies, they cut anything that's not directly connected to the story and to the main star. And the main star was Goldie Hawn. She was so sweet to me. She was so wonderful, and she had her mother on the set. I mean, it was just absolutely amazing.
Did you get to meet Kurt Russell?
No. He did not come down the set when I was there. But I worked days. I did not work nights. See, if I had the night shoots, I'm sure he would have popped down to see, you know, Goldie for a minute or two. Now, these were shoots from, like, 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. and then turn around 7 a.m., you know, to be at the club. They weren't late shoots. So, you know, I never saw Kurt, but I did meet Goldie's mother, you know, which was really touching to me. You know, I thought that was really sweet. She was just so gracious and not a diva at all. You know how sometimes when you're that big of a star, you know, because back then when she did Protocol, she was the top of the game. The top.
And, the cool thing is, I don't want to keep going on this topic because I want to talk to you about some other stuff, but I will admit, and I'm not ashamed to say this, but I will admit my fandom with you started watching, I hate to say this, but watching movies on USA Up All Night. You know, Vice Academy 4, now I remember seeing you in Bikini Drive-In. And, of course, Attack of the 60-Foot Centerfold, you know. And, I mean,
Did you see Sorority Girls and the Creature from Hell? I have the starring role in that one. That was played every Saturday night on USA Up All Night.
I know. I was going to get to that. That was.
Oh, okay, because that one was a big hit.
And then we'll ask a few more questions about that. Then we can get off the topic because I know that fans are.
Icon?
You know, yeah.
Oh, you cut out for a minute.
Well, I was going to say some of the. Go ahead.
I was going to say I have so many stories behind everything I did that is really interesting, and I'm not saying this to sound like I'm bragging or anything. You know what I mean? I mean, you tell.
Well,
you
no,
know,
no, by the way, I mean, you know, it's,
so
you
ask,
know a
ask
lot
a
of
question,
the.
Ask me a question about something from one of the movies. You know, ask me anything. There's a cool story somewhere.
Well, I'll tell you what, I didn't want to go there, but I'll ask it. You know, in some of the films that you've been in, without a top, whatever, topless, whatever. Now, let me ask you this. When you agree to take these roles, do they let you know that your character is going to be topless in a scene?
Absolutely.
And if that's the case... Do you, as an actress, say, okay, I will do this, but I only want the director and the cameraman on the scene. I don't want anybody else on set? Or how does that work?
Icon, let me tell you something. Everybody that I have worked with are completely professional. I've been so blessed in my career, so fortunate, that every film, and I mean every single one, without exception, has been so professional. I knew right at the beginning what was to be expected of me, and I didn't start going topless until I was put in Playboy magazine in 1987, April 1989, Shannon Tweed's on the cover. And I was Miss Buns of the Month, and I was topless, and I did it because, you know, it was Playboy, and I was going to the mansion, and Hugh Hefner was so nice to me, and it was just such a cool scene. And I said, you know, what's the big deal? I always loved being nude. I mean, when I was a little girl, I just was at a meeting with Jim Wynorski, and somehow I came up. I said, I'm going to do this interview with you, Icon. And I said, I know he's going to ask me about nudity. And I said, I'm going to tell you right now, I started doing nudity with you, but I did it before you. I said, when I was a little girl, when I started this interview out, well, I told you I grew up in the countryside of New Jersey with my puppies. Well, we had a trampoline in the backyard, and when the summer rains came, I took my clothes off, jumped on a trampoline without, you know, I love being naked, nude. I mean, it just is so freeing. And I used to go skinny dipping. I still go skinny dipping. I have a pool where I live now. Don't tell my neighbors, but, you know, when it gets dark, I go out at night and skinny. I love it. But, you know, I always had, when I came from Broadway, as a real actress, you know, there's a stigma attached. Like, oh, you can't be a real actress and take your clothes off, you know, that kind of thing, which is like, you know, something you had to pay attention to back in the 80s. You had to pay attention if you wanted a career. You know, who knows? I may not have gotten into Protocol if I had been in Playboy before Protocol, you know, and they said, oh, well, she's a Playboy model, so we can't use her, you know. That kind of thing. There was a stigma.
I was going to ask you about that.
Yeah, there was a stigma. But it switched. In the late 80s, Playboy became super cool. And if you were in Playboy, like Shannon Tweed, and, you know, there were a lot of famous actresses, starting in the late 80s, early 90s. And it became like, oh, okay, you know, Playboy was a good starting point. So once I went into Playboy, I called up Jim Wynorski, and I said, because he had asked me, I had met him at a party in the Hollywood Hills, a fancy place, and he had asked me if I wanted to be in one of his movies, and he worked with Roger Corman. He said, but you'll have to do nudity, and I said, oh, I can't do that. I just came from Broadway. I'm a real actress, and I don't want to. And he says, okay, well, if you ever change your mind, give me a call. Well, I was in Playboy in 1989. I believe it was April 1989 issue. And right after that, I called Jim Wynorski up on the phone. And this was right after, by the way, I had a co-star with Al Pacino. A lot of people don't know this in Sea of Love. And something happened with that, and I don't want to get into all the details of that right now, but as soon as that was over with, my whole destiny changed. When I went into Playboy, I called up Jim Wynorski. Jim Wynorski had a movie called Haunting of Morella going on, a Roger Corman film with Nicole Eggert, Lana Clarkson, who was shot by Phil Spector. You know who Lana Clarkson is?
Yes.
Yeah, that's a Hollywood tragedy. And then the guy who just passed away, I can't think, he was in I Spy with Robert Vaughn, blonde hair, and he was on the series NCIS Forever. He just passed away. McCollum. Not Ian McCollum. You know who I mean.
Yes. My name is Chase, but I know who you're talking about, yes.
Yeah, I'm going to Google right now on IMDb. But anyway, it was a big movie. The actress who was supposed to be in the tub did not show up. the beautiful actress playing the serving girl on Haunting in Marilla. And she's in that old-fashioned tub. If you see that movie, it's one of the best movies ever. And what happened was she didn't show up. And here Jim Wynorski had this big, I'm going to put Haunting in Marilla in here, in IMDb right now. Ding. So she didn't show up. And I guess because I had just called Jim Wynorski, it's so much about timing, Icon. Oh, David McCollum. Nicole Eggert, David McCollum, Christopher Halstead. Those are the main stars. Writers, Edgar Allan Poe, director Jim Wynorski, producer Roger Corman, Haunting in Marilla. So anyway, so David McCollum. And anyway, so a big budget B movie, because there's different budgets with the B movies. Anyway, Jim calls me on the phone, and he says, how fast can you get down to the set, to Roger Corman's studio? I said, as soon as I get my clothes on, I said, hey, you want to hear a joke? It's really funny, but it's true. I said, well, I haven't even showered or washed my hair yet. He said, don't worry about that. You're going to be in a bathtub. Is that hilarious? I drove down to Venice, where the Roger Corman studios are. He put me in this old-fashioned bathtub. And if you see Haunting in Marilla, it's one of the coolest scenes ever. I get my throat slit. It's like the best movie. Did you ever see Haunting in Marilla?
Yes, I did.
Oh, my God. I'm a fan. I'm telling you. And then I lie in... on this cold floor in this castle. They had a castle there, and it was just like a stone floor covered with fake blood, and then a pool of blood underneath me. I'm stark naked, but you only see the back of me. In the tub, you see the water comes up to the top of my chest, so you don't see the nipples or anything, but from that moment on, you know, it was, as long as it was done artistically, like when you see Death Dancers, you know, I mean, everything's done artistically. So that's why this is a good time for me to clarify for the younger fans. I never did porn, ever. I am not a porn actress. I am a B movie star. And The furthest rating that goes is NC-17 with Death Dancers. And then I did a couple of Playboy movies. NC-17. There's no porn. So I just wanted to clarify that because sometimes, you know, because I do the sexy pictures and done nudity, people get confused. They don't distinguish between what's porn and what's, you know, PG, I mean, R-rated, you know, where the lead, or even if you're not the lead, you know, you do a little topless scene or you do, you know, what do you call it, a sex scene that's not really, you know, pretend. Simulated, but not real. So I just wanted to clarify that I'm a real actress, trained in New York, and, you know, been doing movies for a long time now, and I've done from Shakespeare to Sorority Girls and the Creature from Hell.
And, of course, everybody knows, you know, the most famous NC-17 movie will always be the movie Showgirls. And I always said the tagline for that movie is, where else can you see a cast member of Saved by the Bell topless that isn't Mario Lopez?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean,
you know, we have
Debbie Dutch as our guest here. We got about 15 or so minutes. Well, actually, we got 20 minutes left with Debbie. So now, you mentioned that you're working on a new project. Are you able to talk a little bit about that or not?
Yes, I just found out. Yes. I just met with Jim Wynorski. I cannot believe how many years we've been working together, but that's how Hollywood works, you know. You work with people.
Real quick, I got to ask you, what would it take for you to hook us up with Jim?
Oh, and in what way? As far as a podcast?
An interview, yes.
Oh, I'll ask him.
All right.
But I don't think he's going to do an hour. I don't think he'll do an hour and a half.
Well, no. Here's the deal. Usually our interviews are usually 30 minutes long. However, because I screwed up with the time zone and we had issues with the studio that night that you're supposed to be on, we wanted to give you your due diligence and give you a special show that only you're on, that everybody's listening to right now. And I'm not just saying this because it's you. Right now we're getting probably more listeners than we ever have in any other episode because
wow.
You're on and it's great.
Oh, my gosh. Boy, I could tell some good stories. I have so many good stories. Well, no, I'll ask Jim. He's kind of busy right now because he's prepping for this really cool new movie, and I can announce it. It's called Catwoman of the Moon, and it's a reboot from a 1950s movie. Sven Gulli probably has shown it. Catwoman of the Moon. Have you seen it?
Okay.
You got to pull it up tonight if you can. It is so cool. And I won't get into the story, but anyway, I'm so excited because I just found out today I'm going to be in it. I'm assuming I'm playing one of the Catwomen. I haven't gotten the script yet, but there are a couple different, you know, parts in it, but... the movie's called Catwoman of the Moon, and that's about all I can say about it, but I'm very excited about that. But I would like to talk a little bit about, you know, since we have so little time left, I wanted to share with the listeners that, you know, being in showbiz is really wonderful, but it's also, you have to be really diligent. Diligent in the sense of, you know, being really sincere with, you know, really wanting to make it happen because there's so much rejection. And it's not so much like, you're not good enough or that kind of thing, but that's also an issue. You know, you have to make sure you're trained and have your, in the acting world, it's called your chops down. Because when you're on the set, you know, you have to know what you're doing. You know, you can't just say the lines and you know, hit the marks, you know. That's important, but you have to really know what you're doing as far as creating a character and making a script reality. But what I was going to get to is that, you know, I've been doing this for a lot of years, and I'm so fortunate to still be working because a lot of actors at my point in life just sort of decide to do something else because it's so much, you know, you have to do in order to keep working. But what I wanted to share is that you get to a point where, yeah, you know, I want that part. I want to work with Jim or I want to work with Dustin Ferguson I want to be in Miami Vice, you know, like when I was on Miami Vice. But one of the coolest things that's happened to me in my life, Icon, is I decided I had this vision in my head of a movie I wanted to do. And I kept seeing it, and I created this character. It's called the Hollywood Warrioress. And sort of like, wait a minute, hold on. I'm on the phone where they can, I don't know. Disregard that beep. I'm on the phone that I could talk to without it going off. But I created this character called the Hollywood Warrioress, and I had this vision of a movie. I'm going to skip to the chase, but it took several years for the vision to turn into a manifestation. I created this character. I was in the Hollywood Christmas Parade. but I didn't have a script yet. And then I would go to the film market, you know, like it's kind of like Cannes, but it's not Cannes, it's in Los Angeles. I got together a treatment, and then I found a screenwriter, and then you got to find a backer. And I did all of that, and guess what happened? We made the movie. It's called The Hollywood Warrioress. I'm the producer and the creator. I even was the director. And it's you can download it on the YouTube or Amazon.com right now. It's so good. But I produced it myself, Icon. It was like I went and I was waiting for millions of dollars for this, going to meetings and blah, 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 blah. And I said, you know what? I'm going to just do it myself. So I pulled out the credit cards and just did it, and we put it together, and it actually turned out damn good for what it was. However, what I'm getting to, after that, we now I have a new series. It is so good. It's a sequel to the movie Hollywood Warriors. It's called War of the Gods. I'm going to premiere it here this summer in Chicago, because one of the locations I shot at is in Chicago, and we're gonna premiere it at Alley Cat Comics, which is right in center Chicago, which is going to be fun. And then I'm going to do a premiere here in Los Angeles at sometime late August, early September, and I'm going to have, like, invite people from Netflix and Hulu. And what I'm getting to is that I plan on selling this thing and having 13 episodes being shot. That'll keep me busy for the next 5 years on that, as well as doing, you know, movies like Jim's movie. I can't wait to be in Catwoman. That's shooting in July. But, I mean, what I'm getting to is whatever your dreams are, please do not limit yourself, because we do not know how far we can go with our life. Our life is like, you know, I created like the superhero, the Hollywood Warriors. If you look at the movie, Scott, I'm going to send you a photo. I'd like to send something of the Warriors to you. I will send you something of the Warriors, Hollywood Warriors, so you can, you know, check it out in your free time. You'll see what I'm talking about. We all have a superhero power. But what I'm getting to is, please, everybody listening, everybody can have their dreams come true. Now, of course, I want to share my spiritual path. I believe in God, of course, but it's so important to have faith and believe in yourself. That's number one. And then I encountered the mantra Nam Myoho Renge Kyo for world peace. But this chant also releases this infinite power within you. So I just wanted to share it with everybody, because I don't want to seem like, oh, I'm the queen and you know, I'm cooler than anybody else. I'm no different than anybody else. I started out as a little girl in New Jersey with nothing and just a dream. And here I am all these years later and still living the dream. And as long as you want the dream to go on in your heart, it will. It will.
Well, you know,
they can have their dreams come true, too. That's all I want to say, Scott, Icon, before we say goodbye. Look at how you're doing your dream. This cool podcast, it's amazing. Look at you.
Well, you know, I'll tell you what, though. We've come a long way from our humble beginnings. But real quick here, speaking of photos, now I do believe that you were going to send us some autographed photos for giveaways, right?
I'm going to send some. Yeah, definitely. Definitely.
Okay.
I can't send too many, but I was going to send one to you for sure. But if you want a couple extra, for you, anything.
All right. Well, I'll tell you what, our fans would definitely love that. For, you know, we have a big giveaway show, and what we have our fans do is they go to our Facebook page, Attitude Era, Monday Live Monday, like that. Go to 89.1 Kent FM page, like that. Do a $10 a month donation to Power of the Tower to keep our station on the air, and then we get them qualified to win an autographed picture from one of our guests, past guests, current guests, or future guests. And I know that there's definitely you're on a lot of people's lists like mine. you know. The
I was going to send you an ultra sexy one.
All right, well, that'd be cool. I mean, one guy asked, texted and asked if I would ask for a shirt and autograph thing, but they said I wouldn't have the guts to ask for it, so I don't know. I could ask for it, but it's not coming from me. It's coming from a listener, actually.
Well, I promise you one.
Well, yeah, the guy asked if I would see if you would send an autograph thong, but I'm not going to ask for that. You can do that if you want, but a guy asked if I had the guts to ask you that.
Text me his name. I'll send it to you.
Really?
I'll send you one.
All right, I will definitely send you his name.
It'll be my gift to you and to this fan. I don't know his name. Facebook message me his name so I can put a name on it.
All right, I will definitely do that. And we have a few minutes here.
An hour and a half? Has this been an hour and a half?
It's been an hour and 15 minutes so far.
Oh, my gosh. There's so many more stories to tell you.
Well, this is not going to be the only time you're on with us. We're going to go over that in a second. But so we don't forget this, if our fans want to check out and see if you got a Facebook, an Instagram, a YouTube, a Twitter, a Twitch, a TikTok, what do you got?
Well, I got the fan page is at the Hollywood Warriors page on Facebook. It's called Hollywood Warrioress, and it talks about the movie that I did, but also most of fans go there. But, I mean, I'm also Debbie Dutch, DEBBIEDUTCH on Facebook. But just make sure that if you go to that page, you say I was on the Icon Show, because I get so many requests that I can't accept everybody if I don't know you.
I'll tell you what.
Yeah, you only get so many spaces there, and I don't want to get all filled up with the wrong people. So make sure if you go to Debbie Dutch on Facebook that you say, oh, I listened to your show on the Icon. And then, of course, I'll friend you and all that stuff. So make sure you put that in the friend request, because I can't even tell you how many friend requests that I couldn't accept because I didn't know who they were.
Well, one thing I will ask you though, on your Facebook page, the one picture where you're holding a like a sword with a skull, and you got this most amazing bikini on. That's just a painting, right? That's not an actual picture, right? That's a painting?
That was done by Gio Braun, who is a professional artist, and that was done specifically for a show right before the pandemic. So it was probably 2019, around Halloween time, 2019, for a big convention in North Carolina. We all got one. Each one of the Scream Queens that went, and he did it for me because I'm like the warriors, So that was my representation, from this artist for that particular show. And I loved it so much that I used it as my cover page. I actually want to get a painting of it and frame it and put it in my home. I have a gorgeous home in West Hollywood. I'm so fortunate.
Well, hopefully hopefully someday you'll let me come out there and you can throw me in the pool or something.
Oh, well, guess where I'm going right after we hang out? I'm going right in the pool.
You're going to hit the pool?
Yep. I have to tell you, I'm all dolled up, too, because I didn't know whether we were doing the Zoom or FaceTime. I got my eyelashes on and a sexy outfit and lipstick. My hair is all done up pretty. So I'm going to take all that off. Yeah, I'm going to take all that off and put a bikini on now and go in the pool. What do you think of that?
Well, or maybe we could do a face. No, I'm kidding. I was going to say that. We can do a FaceTime, you and I, and I can pick out your outfit. I'm kidding. You know, there is one other friend of yours that I've sent her one, two, three, four. I've sent her six requests to be on the show, but I don't know if she doesn't ever check her Facebook or whatever. But Becky LeBeau, Bubbles from Back to School, and I've been trying to get her on our show for a long time, and she never responds. I don't know if she doesn't like me or she doesn't even know me. But I don't know.
You know what? She's like really busy. She's gonna be in Catwoman. We're gonna be in Catwoman together. You check out my Facebook page. Jim just
I did.
He just posted it. Lisa London, Becky LeBeau, Lauren Parkinson, me, and my two girlfriends, Christine and Delilah. I think Rocky DeMarco is going to be in it too.
Well, you know, I'll tell you. You know, we had Lisa London as a guest on our show, but maybe if you could. Kind of let her know that how much fun that you had on the show, and we would definitely like to have her on with us.
I'll be seeing her real soon. She was just at my I had a big birthday bash Saturday night. The place is packed. It was filled with people, movie people. All kinds of people.
Yeah, you just turned 22.
That's it. 29. Wait, I'll take 22.
You're awesome.
I'll take 22, Icon. I'll take 22.
But yeah, if you could let Becky know how much fun the show is, and I'll. We'll get her on, and we'll do her upright and everything, and because we've had a couple people from the movie Back to School with us. I don't know, I'm sure you've seen the movie, right?
Of course.
You remember the scene where Rodney Dangerfield is in the sorority house and he goes and he pulls the gal that was in the shower. Was on our show.
Oh, how cute.
And she told us how she had so many more lines, and then when she was watching the movie in the theater with her boyfriend at the time, how disappointed she was. She told him how many lines that she had, and all she was a scream.
Remember what I just told you about Protocol? Same thing happened to me with these big movies. They have to keep to time limit.
I know, and but I'll tell you what though, the movie would have made over $100 million if they would have had more of you on it.
Oh, that is the sweetest thing. Well, I can't. You got to ask me one last question. It must be some burning question.
Yes. What is your scheduled? You mentioned Catwoman. When do you start filming this?
Mid July, if everything goes accordingly. But the movie business is such that depending on the production, whether it be getting locations, money. Whatever, but Jim is pretty astute. Like, if he says he wants to shoot something mid-July, I would say it would be pretty right on. He doesn't fool around.
And,
he's one of the best, if not the best.
And if Jim happens to ask you if you know of a good egomaniac that would be a great extra in the film, make sure you pass my name on there.
Well, you know what? I don't think there are any extras in this. There's a Catwoman, and then there's a spaceship. I want you to see the original, 1950, in the 50s. Google Catwoman from the Catwoman of the Moon. Catwoman
right,
of the.
I will definitely.
Yeah, Catwoman of the Moon. It's like the coolest thing. You're gonna absolutely go nuts when you see this. And I'm pretty sure I'm not quite sure exactly which Catwoman I am. That's still to be seen, but. You'll see what I'm talking about. There's a Catwoman, and then there's a spaceship.
All right. Oh, it's on Tubi. I watched that tonight. It's on Tubi.
It's on something.
Yeah, it's on Tubi. I'm going to watch it.
Sounds like a plan.
Well, I'll tell you, Debbie, you have been so wonderful. And I can't tell you how much. Well, you know already how much I love you, but you have been so wonderful. And hopefully, we will be able to get you back on again after you complete the Catwoman movie.
And that would be perfect.
We'd love to talk to you more about that.
Yeah, that would be perfect. It's going to be very exciting. And I'll tell you. I already know it's going to be a big hit. Number one, it's based on a really cool movie from the 50s. And second, because of all the cool actresses that are going to be in it, it's going to be off the hook.
And we already know that you're going to make a better Catwoman than Halle Berry and Michelle Pfeiffer.
Oh, I was in acting class with Michelle Pfeiffer.
Are you serious?
Yeah, I'm serious.
Oh, wow.
We were all starting that together when I came to L.A.
That is amazing.
Yeah, I was in class with Michelle Pfeiffer. I was in class with a lot of stars at the time. So,
wow, because
do you remember...
Michelle Pfeiffer, too.
The guy from Greece, Conway.
Yep.
Yeah, I was in class with him. Greece had just come out. Yep, as a young actress, you have to keep studying because, as Agnes, going full circle, Agnes Moorhead, I actually... she was on Broadway doing Gigi, and I was on Broadway in the junior company. And we actually roomed together in my grandmother's apartment in New York. And I remember her telling me that a pretty face is a dime a dozen. She said,
so you're also in school with Jeff Conway?
Jeff Conway, yeah.
He became more famous in Taxi.
Yeah, that was when he was in Taxi. Yep. Yeah, I was in with a lot of famous people. You had to audition to get in that class too. By the way, it doesn't come easy. Just want to make sure any young actors is listening. You just don't show up with a pretty face. You gotta. Really know your craft. You have to know your craft. And you have to keep at it. Like right now, I happen to work and keep my craft up now, but, you can't let anything slide. You can't get on the set and all of a sudden not be able to cry on cue and stuff like that. They'll fire you, Or, you'll get a bad reputation like, oh, she was no good. And then you don't get hired again. That's why you get hired over and over again. You make sure you deliver the goods, And then not only deliver the goods, be a good person on the set. You can't be you know, demanding or, you know, any of that kind of stuff, you won't work again.
I will say this, Debbie. You mentioned being just a regular individual and not doing that whole because I'm in Hollywood, I'm better than you and all that stuff. I mean, that's definitely not you. And you are just a wonderful person and a warm-hearted individual. And I can't tell you how much we do appreciate you. And I'm not just saying this because you're on with us. It is true. We love you very much, and you are just awesome.
Well, I love you too, Icon. And I'm going to be sending the photos in the mail as soon as I can. They'll be out this week for sure. I've got your address.
And I'm going to send you the address of where to send it to so you can send it to us. And I will send you the name of the fan who will remain anonymous. But I will send you his name so you can autograph the said item.
Oh, Ivan. Okay, darling. All
right.
I just want to thank you so much. I'm almost getting teary-eyed here.
Well, I'll tell you what. We don't want you to do that, but I'll tell you what. You have been so wonderful, and most importantly, though, thank you for being a friend. And I just admire you so much.
That sounds like a song. Thank you for being my friend. In their song.
Well, yeah, the Golden Girls theme song.
Yeah. Okay. I knew there was a song. I thought it was like a James Taylor song or something.
Right. Well, I'll tell you what. The one song that best describes you and I was a song by Dan Seals called "One Friend," and the tagline is, "If I only had one friend left, I wanted to be you." So you are very awesome, and I do appreciate you. Thank you.
So do I get to listen to any of this back, or is this just live?
Well, what I will do is I will send you a link to the show so you can listen to it back, and you can post it wherever you want.
Giddy, that's what I want. I love it.
Right, and I will definitely send that to you, definitely.
Sounds wonderful.
All right. I don't know if Big Swing's listening. I'm waiting for him to play our outro music, but I guess we'll just chat until he comes back, you know?
Well, you know what?
So.
I think we probably should say goodbye. You know why?
Why is that? Well, you got to get in the pool, I know.
I put my bikini on. I hate to sound like that because I love you.
You were getting dressed when we were on the phone? That's an interesting task.
Well, you know what? It's easy when I'm not in front of the I guess if in front of the cameras it's easy too. You know what
I'm
saying?
That's awesome. Well, I'll tell you what. Next time we have you on, we'll have to try and find a way to do Zoom.
Yeah, let's do the Zoom. We'll do the Zoom. That'll be fun.
All right.
So my love.
And yes, I do love you very much. You're awesome. Thank you.
So I guess it's that time, the dawning hour. Until we meet again.
Love you. Take care.
I love you so much, Scott, and you'll be hearing from me soon. And you got my number now. If ever you take my cell. Oh no, I'll text it to you. My cell phone, so we can keep.
Yeah, you don't want to. You don't want to put it over the air.
Oh, I know.
Next thing you know.
That's it.
Next thing.
I want to send a big kiss, and I want to tell everybody. I love you all. I can't thank you enough for everything. And please remember that you can never give up on your dreams. Never, ever, ever. And never be defeated. Just always keep moving forward and enjoy this beautiful treasure that we call our lives.
There was one other thing I was going to ask you. You know, you were talking about that bikini you wore in the movie. Did you get to keep that? Do you still have that, like, up on your wall, like, framed or something?
Yeah, not the protocol bikini. They took that. That wardrobe, just like when I was in the Paramount movie with Steve Guttenberg, that they had their special wardrobe. So, you know.
All right.
But other movies, yes, I get to keep the wardrobe. Yep.
And I'll tell you what, the next time we meet on, not only we're going to talk to you about being in class with Michelle Pfeiffer and Jeff Conway, I definitely want to talk to you about being in on set with Kerry Mahoney from Police Academy, which is, of course, Steve Guttenberg.
Yeah, that's it. You got it.
All right. Well, I'll tell you what. We are getting the cut sign. So I do love you, and
I love you.
Be
I
safe
love
as
you.
Always.
And
we
until
be
we meet again. Until we meet again, darling.
I love you as always. Thank you.
Bye-bye. Bye. Big kiss.
You think you know me?